The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is always strongly advised. Good evening and welcome to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live this evening, emails only. Email her at instudio101@gmail.com. And now, right to your host of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you, Gary, and welcome to this episode of Down the Garden Path, where we discuss every week, where we discuss down-to-earth tips and advice for your plants, garden, and landscapes. As a landscape designer, I think it's important and possible to have a great garden that is low maintenance. So every week, I do my best each week to bring you interesting, relevant, and helpful topics and guests that can help us with our yards and gardens. So tonight, I'm really excited to talk trees. Our timely topic is trees, which is a huge topic. I know there'll be some questions, and I have lots of questions for our guest. So joining me tonight is Jason Ingley from Davy Tree Company. And Jason is the district manager of the Toronto East Territory. He's been with Davy Tree Expert Company for 17 years at the Toronto East office. He is a certified arborist with a degree in forestry from Lakehead University. And he lives in North Durham region with his wife and two kids and two dogs. And he says he's an amateur gardener at best. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you.
So an amateur gardener, eh?
Yeah. I like to think that I'm a good gardener, but not so much. So.
Yeah. If you live in the country, it is harder, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's harder to find time when you're in the green business too to do gardening on the side.
So. Absolutely, absolutely. It definitely is hard in the industry to focus on that. Mm-hmm. And there really isn't for me. There's a little bit of a slow time, but for you, there really isn't, is there?
No, deep in the heart of winter, it can get slow. Mm-hmm. It tends to be the slow time, but in general, it's probably about 10 months a year where it's fairly busy.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And I know people still think it's a seasonal business, but they don't realize that, especially with our seasons lately, like look at it, November, and we're still wearing sweaters, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This year actually is particularly busy, more towards the fall here than it has been the rest of the year. And I don't know if it's more of the way the weather has gone. You come through a major drought and heat wave in the summer, and all of a sudden people want to take care of things right before the winter comes.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So. Yeah, I think things are, they were procrastinating or putting off because it was too hot.
Yeah.
and when they finally left their house and went outside and went, oh, look, let's go. We have to deal with this.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about homeowners, residential homeowners and their trees a little bit. So what would you say your top, you know, let's say the top two issues or the burning issues right now that you find homeowners are facing regarding their trees?
Well, it seems this year that the hot topic or the main concern I'm getting calls about tends to be actually prepping or worries for people's trees about potential storm damage.
Okay.
And the potential for either ice or wind or whatever storms. And it's not an unfounded concern because, at least in the GTA, it's been almost at least full 2 years since a major storm. We had an ice storm back in December 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, there has not really been any major storm events in the GTA. And when that happens, you'll find even with small weather events, like a bit of wind here and there, things will start breaking and whatever. And I think it's not an unfounded concern. We get a lot of winds getting into November. It's not just limited to southern Ontario,
mm-hmm.
but we get a lot of winds coming off the Great Lakes that are big storm-type, almost snow-producing machines sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, it's windy, and you get swirling winds. You get different types of winds there, and as well as a concern for ice in the future, too. So that tends to be one of the hot topics we're getting right now.
And don't you think the ice storm, because prior to that, again, it had been a while since we had a storm like that. So I think it's still so fresh in everybody's mind that people are more aware of the issues and really want to be prepared.
The ice storm woke a lot of people up in terms of concern for trees, too,
mm-hmm.
because it was so catastrophic in the Toronto area. Actually, almost all the way around the Great Lake.
Yeah.
Lake Ontario.
Yeah.
It was so catastrophic. I mean, if you ask anyone in the GTA where they were during the ice storm or what's their story, they've got a story to tell because their streets closed for days, mm-hmm. power off for weeks.
Yeah.
And people are concerned about that even to this day. When I go and someone says, oh, I'm worried about this thing in a storm, I'm worried about it. Well, it's not unfounded, actually. Since the ice storm actually happened, a lot of trees, especially ones that weren't taken care of afterwards, so no proper pruning or type of remedial type of pruning, a lot of them have decay in there because of big rips in them. Decay organisms get inside those trees, and now they've been in there for a couple of years, mm-hmm. working away, making trees more hollow, making them more weak,
right.
So and more susceptible to the next storm.
Okay.
So since the ice storm, there's a lot of stuff that if it was done taken care of a little bit, it's a bit of a big concern because we have not had a major storm event so far in the last year and a half.
Yeah, for sure. We didn't even get, I was saying this to some clients, that normally even the big hurricanes that they have on the coast, mm-hmm. on the East Coast, and then they kind of come our way. And certainly we don't get the hurricane, but we certainly get like a couple days of bad weather. We didn't even get that this year. It went back out to the water.
Yeah.
So we didn't even see, and I think that's why the leaves have really hung on to the trees almost. You know, aside from the ones that dropped early because they were stressed, the rest mm-hmm. have really hung on because we didn't get a storm. We didn't get one of those hard rains.
Yeah.
So
just recently with a couple of winds mm-hmm. and cold weather, sub-zero temperatures, I think most of the leaves just started.
Yeah.
A lot of leaves just started dropping here over the last week or so in the GTA, yeah.
Okay. So what type of things should homeowners be doing to kind of look out or to prepare their trees for winter?
Well,
and storms, winter and storms.
Well, I would say the number one thing is the trees are showing signs already. They would have been showing signs of stress there already.
Mm-hmm.
For most trees, if there's dieback in there, like the dead stuff is the first things that break off and fall. But there's also some trees that are very prone to storm damage. Soft maples, Manitoba maples, silver maples, Norway maples.
Mm-hmm.
The way their branching structure is, they are a type of tree that puts on a lot of foliage, a lot of weight on those limbs. And do they do it quickly? They're fast growing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they are more prone to storm damage because they are just that fast growing. They have weak branch attachments. Some weak branch attachments in general are fairly hard for a homeowner to kind of pick out and find on their own.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of time you would say, you know, even if you had the advice of a certified arborist, you come in there, take a look, see if there is some potential issues.
Okay.
Because it's like a lot of stuff is preventable.
Mm-hmm.
not ice storm preventable, because that storm, the ice storm we had a couple of years ago, that took out even took out almost everything. There was no rhyme or reason of, you know, what came down in that storm. But a lot of trees that were properly pruned and had weight taken off of them prior to that ice storm survived that ice storm no problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's the same now. Like if you have a weak a Norway maple with a big kind of like a split that's starting to form in it, but if you don't do anything about it, the weather eventually will.
Right.
That is a weak point. It's the weakest point of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get a swirling wind, a downburst, wind shear, anything that's not a normal, sustained westerly wind, that could rip a weak union apart. And there you go. Sometimes it can be to the point where the tree is unsalvageable just from one wind event. Right,
right. Right. And it's not something they should... You know, I think people maybe put it off and say, I'll get to it, or let's see what happens, or if it comes down, it comes down. But really, it's better to be proactive in this situation, right?
Yeah, I think if someone has a tree of particular concern, I know if it's something that's in the back 40 that doesn't affect anything, well, then maybe it's a non-issue.
Right.
But the closer something is to your house, to you know, your landscaping, a patio, a porch, something that you really value for either shade or coverage or privacy.
Yeah.
You can't just leave that to fate. It at some point, someone should be coming to take a look at that.
Right.
If it's a valuable tree to you, it's probably of value to have someone come take a look at it and make sure that thing is something that's sustainable. I get it quite a bit in the city of Toronto. Quite often people are like, I don't want this touched. I love the privacy. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Well, that disappears.
Yes.
Because if you don't do anything, you know, not managing that type of thing, the people usually can get disappointed, because then a tree would come down, or a big piece of the tree would come down. Then you have no privacy.
Right. Right. Yeah. For sure. So if someone was concerned, if we have a listener out there that was concerned about a tree, what should they do?
Well, the first thing to do is, I would suggest, is to call an arborist. Most arborists, Davy Trees, same way.
Mm-hmm.
Most tree companies will provide free quotes, free advice.
Okay.
As long as you're not asking for like 100 trees to get looked at and an official report, your stuff is free, right?
Yeah.
So, and it's just, it's an assessment. You can do with it what you want. Sometimes a good arborist would say, well, this is your highest priorities. This is stuff that you should really take care of really soon.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff, maybe you can wait for a couple of years, or this is something you need to think about in the future, right?
Right.
So then you can kind of budget yourself that way. But the best thing to do is to call a certified arborist in there, because it's sometimes, I see a lot of trees out there, full leaf, full green, so everyone assumes there's nothing wrong with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until there's a major a flaw that wasn't detected, or it wasn't pruned, or had weight taken off of it, or cut back from a house. Right?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff there, and then it's damaging the house, and it's ripping on down your eaves trough in a windstorm.
So. Right, right. And sometimes, do you have a lot of people where, especially trees in the backyard, where because it's overhanging, you know, I have a lot of people say, it's overhanging on my side, so they cut their side of the tree. So the poor homeowner on the other side that actually owns the tree doesn't realize what's happened to the other side, right? So that poor tree is kind of growing a little... top heavy, no?
Yeah, it's a bit, I get that there's a lot of concern sometimes, with people who are concerned about their neighbor's tree and stuff like that. Here's the thing, it's an ongoing issue and an ongoing legal issue when it comes to neighbors and their trees.
Right.
It used to always be the assumption, and this has been for the last maybe 20, 25 years, people say, well, what overhangs my side, I can take care of. I cut that off, right?
Right.
Well, the reality is that you can do that within reason.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, if you have to climb the tree or get access to the tree, you have to go in your neighbor's yard.
Right.
You can't do that without permission.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't harm a tree. You can't cause damage to someone else's property just because you want it clear of your tomato plant.
Right.
Right. So there's a lot of reasons. People always say, well, I don't get along with my neighbor. I'm like, well, that makes it really difficult to deal with this tree because you're going to have two differing opinions about it. And boy, oh boy, we're not neighbor. We don't deal with neighbor relations.
Yes, exactly,
right?
Exactly. Or you have the person who has the tree who perfectly, they get along fine, but they don't want to spend the money on fixing the tree. So they tell their neighbors, yeah, go ahead, do whatever. I mean, because they're like, they don't want to pay it, right?
Right.
So, but you're right. It makes it challenging for you as in your industry to how to deal with the tree properly and not get involved, get in the middle of a dispute with neighbors.
Yeah.
I could see that being a challenging part of the job.
It is. It can be. And that's the thing. And the part of the job that you have as an arborist, you have to identify that stuff ahead of time.
Yes.
People will tell you. People will say, like, well, my neighbor here, they said I could do this.
Yeah.
They're not paying for it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a big thing, too. And it's fine and dandy, but it's even if you're paying for it, that doesn't mean the neighbor doesn't need to know what's going on with their tree and stuff like that.
Right, right, for
it
sure.
And the legal thing behind that, too, is you can't have a tree. Let's just say I want a hands-off approach. There's people I always see this in the city. They have big, giant trees. I'm hands-off. I'm going to let the tree be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you legally also can't jeopardize the safety of your neighbors by saying that you don't want to deal with your tree.
Okay.
So that's an issue too. So,
yeah.
And that's when I see city or municipalities will get involved because people will say, well, I'm not touching the tree. I'm leaving my tree alone. It's fine the way it is.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, you've got big dead pieces falling into, you know, someone's backyard where the kids are playing.
Exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is better if you're not sure and if you think there's damage or if you have some concern, then it's better to make the call, right? And have someone come out and take a look at it. And the one good thing, I wanted to ask you about the difference between tree trimming and tree pruning and when is the right time to call an arborist. Because in my experience, just because you're called and, you know, you will often say, won't you, that no, this tree is fine. Like, it doesn't mean you're automatically going to start attacking, you know, I would say trimming the tree or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think the education portion is understated on how important it is that you're an arborist, the training that and expertise. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, that's a thing too. Like, you know, a lot of people will say, well, I'll call someone and come trim it. My landscaper or my grass cutter.
Grass cutter, like, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Grass cutter. Well, you know, I guess anyone with a chainsaw or a saw can be considered a trimmer.
Right.
So, but the problem is, maybe a grass trimmer will say, oh, yeah, I'm going to clear it back so we can get the lawnmower under it, and I'm going to cut it back from your house. So you don't have, you know. But the problem is an unprofessional pruning job when it comes to, like, stubbing branches or not making proper pruning cuts.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff has long-term effects.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is if it's for the benefit of the, you can trim a tree to clear buildings and do that kind of stuff. You need a clearance type of pruning, but if you don't use proper pruning cuts, you're subjecting that tree to either decay, to a future problem with stuff dying off and then falling off of it. So that's the thing. Anyone can trim a tree, right?
Yeah.
Anyone that can safely use a chainsaw can trim a tree. But if you're thinking of trimming a tree for whatever reasons, or at least making an educated guess, so, like, if I come out to a site, I would say, well, what do you want to achieve here? Are you trying to achieve some more sun to your, you know, to your backyard? Then there's a one way you'd trim it.
Right.
If you want to make sure nothing's going to be, you know, blocking solar panels or touching the house, that's a different way of trimming it, right? Have it just last as long as possible because it's your favorite tree, then there's another way to trim it, right? So there's different reasons behind trimming it, and an arborist can kind of identify that, but, you know, anyone with a saw can cut something off, but it may not have the long-term goal or the what you're looking for long-term, right? I think you don't realize that even though it does cost money to have a professional insured tree company in there, they don't realize that scrimping on that type of budget stuff can have long-term effects that will actually make it more expensive in the long run.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And that once you lose, if you lose the tree, I mean, especially when a tree is 20-plus years old, right, and that already that height,
yeah.
You know, replacing it, I mean, that's years and years, right? You can't put a price on that.
It's not an easy feat.
Yeah, for sure. So we do have a question. Bryce is in email. He's asking if it is too late to trim a tree now in November. And I guess we kind of need to know what kind of tree, but...
Well, you don't need to know what kind of tree.
Okay.
In general,
mm-hmm.
In general, it is not too late to trim a tree. There are very few trees that are really limited to what time of year you can trim it.
Okay.
And that would be... say something that's a flowering tree. You mean that flowers in the spring?
Okay.
Well, you don't want to trim it right before it flowers. You're going to cut all the stuff where the flower buds are off, right? So that
right.
kind of stuff. Trimming something in the fall, some trees benefit. It's better to trim them when they're near dormancy because you reduce the risk of insect activity or disease activity in them.
Okay.
So some trees are beneficial. So the key is. I'd always say, you know, if you have a major problem, the time to trim your tree is right now.
Oh, okay.
Right,
oh.
To try to get it pruned. Because leaving it to a certain time of year ain't going to improve it.
Right. Now, oh, I see what you mean. But you don't mean right now, meaning November. You mean right as soon as you see the problem.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
As soon as you see the problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's the thing. So I would say, if you're pruning to try to get some more light into a garden, okay, I always get this. Say someone's got a perennial garden.
Yes.
Right? All right. And they want to open it up and get some more light in it. Well, in general, you don't want to see how much you take out of a tree, so you want to trim it when it's in full leaf. Here's the problem, though. If you're going to be having branches come down and you have a nice, widespread, gorgeous garden, I don't know if you want to be dropping tree limbs in there in the middle of the spring and the summer, right?
Yeah.
So maybe November is a good time because everything else is dormant. Nothing will get injured. So it all kind of depends.
Yeah.
An arborist should be able to identify that. No problem.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Perfect. How about evergreens as far as winter, preparing them for winter? I know on the show I often are talking about the importance of watering our evergreens, right, until the ground freezes.
Yes.
Right?
This year especially.
Yes.
I noticed in southern Ontario, at least, the heat. I said that's one of the main issues. We actually had a lot of calls about a month ago. The heat from the summer, not necessarily, what it does to evergreens is it will sometimes get them into a stress state, not necessarily a bad stress state, but they will drop more needles than usual in the fall. So you get a lot of orange interior needles, cedars, spruce trees, that kind of pines. They'll drop. I just call it excessive needle drop.
Okay.
And they do that. It's sometimes a response to heat waves. It's got nothing to do with watering. Heat waves, hot weather, that kind of stuff. I find in the fall after a major, a hot summer, you'll see more excessive needle drop.
Okay. So even if you watered the tree, it still could have this excessive needle drop. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it in plenty of cedars that with plenty of watering that they dropped an excessive amount of needles. I would say, like, usually it's an interior. The interior needles, which is evergreens, are not truly evergreen. Most of them shed their needles every 2 years, and they're growing new ones. So they'll drop older needles. And a healthy tree will be replenishing as much on the outside as the stuff that falls on the inside. But one of the things I would mention, like this year for sure, because we had drought-like conditions, watering, evergreens getting water, or actually most trees getting water right now, right into the winter when the ground doesn't freeze, is essential because it'll really keep the roots from drying out or roots dying off, if we have a harsh winter, you don't get the protection of the snow on the roots. Watering in the fall really helps them get through the winter for sure.
Excellent, excellent. What is your view on wrapping evergreens and cedars, that type of thing, the good old burlap?
In general, I would not recommend it.
Yeah. Okay.
Some
Gary, aren't you relieved that Jason agrees with me? I asked that question with trepidation because I'm an advocate of not doing it, and so I was kind of worried what you'd say.
Poor burlap.
I'll give you my number one reason.
Okay.
My number one reason for it isn't because it doesn't help the tree. I often see with burlap, mm-hmm. this is what happens. It's not limited to Ontario. It's everywhere.
Right.
You wrap something in burlap, we get an abnormal warm spell. March, February, or whatever,
mm-hmm.
a week where it's going above 15 degrees. Well, guess what? Inside that burlap, it's going even warmer.
Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden you have a tree that's there. It's thinking it's 20 degrees. Well, that's a state for it to come out of dormancy. And they'll sometimes come out of dormancy too early, and sometimes stuff will cook inside. I've seen stuff cook inside burlap.
Wow.
Because you get an abnormal warm spell in there. In general, burlap is, for most people will put burlap on something, it's so it doesn't get ripped apart or fallen over with wet snow. Well,
mm-hmm.
you know what? If you trimmed it every once in a while, it's not going to do that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the things that burlap protects best against is like salt. Winter winds with salt, which would be something maybe if you're beside a highway.
Yeah.
Like a major thoroughfare where there's salt spray coming off them all the time. Maybe that instance.
Yeah.
That's probably about it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the tree is much better off trying to withstand the elements on its own rather than trying to wrap it up.
Okay. And then that means make more important with the water, right? So if we're watering...
Yeah.
Then we're helping what they're concerned about as far as the wind damage, because uh-huh. then there's more water for that tree to draw from, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our trees here in Canada, North America in general, in our area, they're built for the winter. So they're built to survive a winter.
Mm.
So, but one of the things is like snow cover, lots of rain in the fall, so the roots... They truly actually don't go dormant. The roots don't go dormant. They just stop growing at the time. And the protection of a snow layer really prevents a cold, harsh wind going. The worst weather in the winter we can get is like a windy, no snow cover, minus 30, maybe not even that much, maybe minus 20, prolonged.
Yeah.
That wind just constantly draws moisture out of plants.
Right.
Just constantly pulls out moisture. And if it's enough, and you don't have enough water down in the root system, it just slowly pulls enough moisture. Then you come out of the winter and you've got a drought-like condition,
yeah.
and your tree starts to spring already way behind the
wow.
eight ball, right?
So. Okay. So we have another question from Shaw. He's asking, what is the best way to water a tree?
Well, there's all kinds of things. I see the municipalities use. They have these things called gator bags. You probably see them quite
yes.
a bit. They do that because you can instantaneously walk up, water a tree, and it slowly trickles out of this bag and waters the roots over the course of an hour.
Okay.
In general, if it's not raining at all, once or twice a week, a good deep watering. If you have a sprinkler, great. You could even just use a garden hose, but the key is, I think, to get the water. You can't just water it like you would your annual, where you get down there a couple of inches and it's probably going to be okay.
Right.
The deeper, you need the water to saturate a little deeper into the soil. So I would say, you know, ideally it would be something, a sprinkler or a steady stream. But you shouldn't need to water it more than one hour, maybe twice a week.
Right.
That's if there's no rain.
Okay.
You have to, you know, if it's raining lots, you may not need to at all.
Mm-hmm.
So. Water.
Okay. And this topic came up a lot, this drought, with people's city trees. And, you know, and everybody was spending so much money on their water bill, watering their lawns and their gardens, that they were kind of, I heard from a lot of people like, well, you know, why should I be spending my money on my city tree? Which is such a shame, because the city trees, I think, are so important. So what's your view on, you know, how do we get people to rally around and look after their city trees?
Yeah, aside, you know what, municipalities are limited on their budget, and and everyone has to kind of understand that, too. A lot of municipalities have really increased their budgets in terms of planting trees over the last few years. City of Toronto and surrounding areas, but most municipalities have realized that they're losing canopy. They're not gaining any canopy as the, you know, as their suburbs grow. They are really running out of trees and leaf cover. That's a big thing for them because municipalities realize, number one, the big city trees, boulevard trees, mm-hmm. they increase the value of your property and of your neighborhood. So that's one, it's an investment, taking care of your city tree, mm-hmm. make sure it gets watered or calling the town when something goes wrong with it or whatever. I mean, you're limited. You shouldn't be doing much more than just even watering it on a city tree. The town should be taking care of the rest of it.
Yeah.
But that's what they do, a lot of planting, and they really want to, because that, the benefit of the trees just reducing pollution, reducing the heat that's generated in the city, even in the suburbs, that kind of stuff. For your house, it reduces your energy cost,
yeah.
having a large shade tree mm-hmm. in your yard. So, I don't know, the benefits, I think, definitely outweigh not having anything there at all.
Yeah, no, so. I agree. And that's from someone who lost my three city trees to emerald ash borer. And so I have these little teeny tiny trees, and it's huge, yeah. right? And I know a lot of our listeners are in that same position.
Yeah,
for sure. And I think should we be trimming this? Like, if you see branches, I know when I go for a walk, sometimes the lindens, especially the branches are now really low, and you know you kind of almost have to duck under the tree to get to walk through the sidewalk. Should homeowners be trimming, or should they just be calling the city?
In general, the best thing would be to be calling the city,
okay.
not only because. If you have a branch that breaks off and hanging down over the sidewalk, I mean, that's a different story, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's within reason. But in general, the municipalities, if there's one tree on a street that's having an issue, they should be going through and doing clearance pruning on several trees.
Mm-hmm.
They should be able to see road signs.
Yeah.
Your street lights should be able to light up the sidewalk so it's not too dark. So it's, a branch here or there, it's not usually a big deal, but in general, it's best to contact your municipality. That's their law that they want to follow.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want people, a whole bunch of arborist wannabes going out and doing their own thing. Right.
So
in general, aside from watering your city tree and, taking care of, sprouts or weeds that are coming in on your city boulevard, in general, the trepa trimming, I would leave that to the city.
Yeah. Okay. Good advice. So we're gonna pause on trees for just a second because we have a question more about you, our Davy Tree. So Ben has written in and he said he heard at the start of the show that you work for Davy Tree, and he has seen Davy Cruz in upstate New York, and he's wondering where are they based out of, and are you a franchise? And I think you've got a little nice history about that, right?
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. So Davy Tree is not a franchise; it's an employee-owned company.
Which I think is so great. It's an employee-owned company, everyone.
Yes. So an employee-owned company, in general, once people have been there for long enough, you can buy stocks into the company. And that's why you will see them all over the States and Canada in different areas. What you would do, actually, if you went online to davy.com in the States or davytree.ca in Canada, you would be able to find out where your local office is.
Okay.
So some areas aren't serviced, of course, by, maybe they're not close enough to the city center. But in general, like upstate New York, I know that there's I think there's an office in Rochester and Buffalo. But same type of thing, I would defer to go in and check it online and seeing if they service your area for sure.
Excellent. And if you've seen it in the area, then that's good. And
you
manage, so what is your territory? Because you say your district, your east.
Yeah, I'm district manager for the Toronto East Territory. We take care of pretty much the eastern half of Toronto and getting into Durham, Durham region, Southern York region. And so we take care of that, this area on the east side of Toronto.
Okay.
And then there's another territory to the west side of Toronto. There's a Northern Toronto Territory. There's Niagara. So, most urban centers actually have a Davy Tree office, but it depends because it is an employee-owned company. They're actively kind of expanding and actively hiring.
Okay.
They're actively expanding all through Canada and the United States.
Yeah.
And we are definitely one of the main contractors in the City of Toronto, for the City of Toronto and Toronto Hydro. And that's why you can probably see the trucks around quite a bit. It depends on what kind of contract they're servicing. So.
Right, right. Well, that's great. And it just, and I think it's a great brand. And it, I think when you see them in the neighborhood, I think it raises, you know, the awareness, the importance of hiring someone who's qualified. And, I, you know, I can't say it enough regarding mature, especially with the mature trees. You know, and I think the unfortunately took something like the Emerald Ash Borer and the ice storm really to raise everybody's, you know, don't you think, knowledge or concern?
Well, that's one thing. People take that stuff for granted, and you know what? It's not new in the tree in the arboriculture world having a major event that takes. They had it back in the 70s with the Dutch elm disease.
Correct. Yes.
So that first in some areas of Canada and the United States, there's still a concern about Dutch elm disease because they still have big giant elms. Well, we don't have them here anymore. You know, and that used to be like the big majestic tree. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that far back. I was born in the 70s, but according to my parents, that was like the biggest, most sprawling, gorgeous trees around.
Yeah.
In every town were the big giant elms.
Yeah.
Well, Dutch elm disease moved in and it was just devastated them all and came through. And it's quite similar with the Emerald Ash Borer. It's kind of like a, you know, a coming of age thing. It's something that's come in. It's an invasive species that's come in, and it's a harsh reality. You can't drive anywhere in Ontario or even the northern states, Michigan. I've seen it in New York, same thing.
Yeah.
Where you don't see a forest that's fully dead. An ash forest.
Yeah.
In a wetland, that's very common.
Yeah.
And it's everywhere. You can't miss it.
Yeah. So. And you think Dutch elm would have taught us to plant diversify, right, with our planting. Mm-hmm. But hopefully we've learned it now, right?
Well, here's the thing. So the most devastating thing about the ash trees.
Mm-hmm.
Was in the 80s and 90s, so coming out of something like the Dutch elm disease phase, everyone's like, all the municipalities like, we need a tree that's low maintenance, right?
Yeah.
No insect, no disease problems. And there was one big giant tree that came out on top, and it was the ash trees.
Okay.
So municipalities through the 80s and the 90s are like, well, we're just going to plant ash trees over because they grow fast, they give shade quick, they do everything, and they don't have any pests. There's nothing that even bothers ash trees.
Yeah.
And that type of mentality, it started changing in the 90s. People were like, so you got to watch. It's a monoculture. You can't just have the same trees all over the place being planted everywhere because that is going to be devastating if there's ever a problem. Well, it came in the form of Emerald Ash Borer, and that's the problem. That the municipalities had a lot of those trees that were on boulevards.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably about between 20 and 40 years old, so they're not small trees.
Yeah.
And they all start going, and it spreads like wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy insect to stop. It's probably one of the hardest ones we've ever seen.
Yeah. And it's one, right? Like there's no, we tried to fight it. We tried to limit the firewood.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, they did. They spent a lot of money. The government, even the Canadian government,
yeah,
and the American government, and a lot of municipalities, and a lot of people do still spending money on research.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, the idea is if people that have done injections and that are doing injections, if they've done them enough and done it long enough and their tree is in good shape, in general, I think the idea is this wave of insects will move on.
Oh, okay.
And if that's the case, or something, a predator comes around and starts eating Emerald Ash Borer, the insects, then maybe, you know, those trees that are salvaged will, you know, thrive through it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. Right now, in most parts of Ontario, it is just an immense population. It's millions upon millions upon millions of these insects are just keep traveling and moving from, you know, neighborhood to neighborhood eating them. So, but once the food source is gone, like in Toronto, it's getting to the point where it's almost gone.
Wow.
People that have managed, that have, you know, saved their ash trees or injected their ash trees, they should be able to get to the point where it would be more of a preventative long term. So.
Okay.
But in general, I think we've lost most of the battle.
Yeah.
I don't see
So now that we felt that impact, there are other diseases that particular trees struggle with, and weather's a bit of a factor too. Like, did you want to speak to that a bit?
Well, one of the things that I was going to point out a little bit is that there's a lot of stuff that's very weather dependent. I just talked a little bit about even the winters. You know, a harsh winter can really, you know, put stress out a tree. Comes into the spring stressed out. Things like foliar diseases, you know, people have crab apples, pears, trees like that. If you have a really wet spring, prolonged wet periods in the spring, you'll start to see your stuff. In the spring, it looks fine, right?
Right.
But there's diseases out there. There's apple scab, pear trellis, rust diseases, all types of leaf spot. Even on maples, you'll get these things called tar spot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of it's detrimental. Some of it can harm a tree. Most of those times, those trees kind of can live with it. Most people can't live with a major disease, foliar disease on the tree because it looks ugly for 50% of the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts to lose its leaves in the summer. And people are like, that's when I get the calls. But at that point, we're already 3 months after the point where the disease came in.
I see. So, yeah. Yeah. Actually, on that point, I have a question for my website because it was someone who wrote in, asked me about spots on her maple tree. And I had, in 2012, I looked back at a blog post I had written about tar spots. So I kind of sent her that article. But she said it's a sugar maple and she doesn't think it's tar spot. She's wondering about anthracnose, is that, am I pronouncing?
Anthracnose.
Thank you. Which leaves spots on the trees and they dry up all summer and fall prematurely. Is that similar to tar spot or?
No, it's not. Anthracnose is actually, it sounds like a devastating disease.
It does.
It's a horrible name. But most trees that can get anthracnose, London plane trees, sycamores down in the States, some maples. I've seen it on some types of oaks and stuff like that too, I believe. But anthracnose really gives a tree, it looks like a drought-like symptoms. It's almost like your leaves start to dry up and fall off in the spring. And you would think, most people are like, why does it have drought-like symptoms? Because it's been raining all spring. Well, that's the reason why. It actually causes it to shrivel, the leaves to shrivel up and fall off. Some trees that can actively survive it, anthracnose, they'll get their leaves back. They'll grow a whole new crop of leaves if it has a major defoliation.
Okay.
If the tree's healthy, it'll grow a whole new set of leaves back in the summer still. So, anthracnose can be devastating, but I don't see it being. It's not a very common disease anymore.
Okay. All right.
And I would really, on a sugar maple, I would tend to think it's something else.
Okay.
It's something worth looking into. I don't think it's anthracnose, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. Okay. She said it's about 8 years old and is her city tree too. Fertilizing, is that, because now you're making me wonder about my London plane tree which were my baby tiny little Q-tip trees that they planted instead of when they took out my ashes. They definitely had some shrivel to them this summer with the leaves. But is it fertilizing?
So here's the thing.
Okay.
A shriveling of leaves there's different symptoms. It can sometimes be a disease. It can sometimes be a weather event. It can be a reaction to something. So that's why sometimes an arborist coming in there, and sometimes you need to see a general trend. So if it does it every year, does it do it once, and then it's not a big deal?
Mm-hmm.
So in general, I really suggest for people living in the city or people that have trees that are of value to them, not just trees that are struggling, not just trees that are dying, but I really advocate deep root fertilization.
Oh, okay.
You have to use a slow-release tree fertilizer. This is not something that your tree is going to pick up as scraps of fertilizer that your grass didn't take up.
Okay.
Right? This is a specific type of tree fertilizing. Davy Tree has an Arborgreen fertilization. We have our own. There are other ones out there as well. We tend to really push. We tend to really advocate ours. It's at slow release, and it really slowly breaks down the in the soil over the course of the year, the tree takes up when it wants. And the reason why I suggest it so much is in a city, people always, you know, tend to say, well, my tree is fine. It's been fine all along.
Yeah.
Well, you know, keeping a tree healthy is you're already ahead of the game when it comes to an insect or disease outbreak. Mm. A healthy tree will not only sometimes repel it,
right,
but at least recover from it a lot better than something that's not been taken care of.
Okay.
We don't have, it's not like the forest. The forest has a constant recirculating of minerals and nutrients from the leaves breaking down, the worms in the soil and all that stuff, and the microbes and everything breaking down. Well, we don't have that in the city or in the suburbs. You know, your tree's growing in usually the soil that was plowed in there from when they built the house.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. It's not the same as what's in the forest, yeah.
It's competing with grass. It doesn't have, you know. So that's one of the reasons. If it's a high-value tree or high-value landscaping type of thing, fertilizing, it goes a long way for its prevention, right?
Yeah.
The same with your own health.
Yeah.
Preventing
problems
before they start is sometimes, you know, you're way ahead of the game.
Okay. Now, is that something homeowners can do themselves? I know there's I can't think of the brand name, but there's like a root fertilizer where it's a long, like metal pole that you kind of dig into the, is it something that homeowners should try themselves or?
I've seen that Ross root feeder.
There you go.
Yeah, it's called a Ross root feeder. Yeah.
Yes.
They got the technology right. The only thing is that it's a high salt fertilizer. That's the only thing.
Okay.
So you would have to. It's not necessarily detrimental to the tree, but it's high salt.
Okay.
So if you over fertilize and whatever that you and whatever you don't get into the roots right then, whatever root doesn't take up, it's gone.
Okay.
So you'll see if you have a Ross root feeder, it actually says on the instructions you should do it a couple times a year because every time you fertilize, the tree takes up what you put in the ground right then.
Okay.
And then what it doesn't take, it goes down into the soil and it's gone.
It's gone. Right? So it's not the slow release that you would, like an arborist would provide.
Right. Yeah. And a tree company, like that's the thing, Daytree, of course, they're going to push their own products, but there are other ones out there, but I will push ours and really recommend ours. It's a slow release and low salt is the number one thing for
trees. Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. And that's deciduous or evergreen?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know what? A lot of people always say, I put tree spikes in.
Spikes.
You know what?
Yep.
Same type of thing. High salt and the roots have to grow towards the spike in order to pick up that stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's the thing. There are lots of products out there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And that's why, you know, there's lots of different things to choose from. But in general, the application of getting it below the grass is really essential too.
Really important.
Grass is a very aggressive, does not like trees. It tries to outcompete trees all the time.
So. Yeah, it does, doesn't it? We do have a question from Emma. She's asking when cutting off a branch, I think I know the answer to this one too. Should you paint the cut with tree paint? How often are you asked this one, Jason?
Yeah, in general, no.
Okay, yeah.
The quick answer is no. It does that type of that. You can still get tree pruning paint out there.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it in the Home Depots and whatever. You can get tree pruning paint everywhere. It's essentially a latex. It's almost like it just kind of seals it up.
Yeah.
Now most trees, they're gonna seal that wound up on their own. All right. They as soon as that limb's gone, they send cells and it calluses over that wound, and then it will try to seal it off itself. Most trees are great at it.
Mm-hmm.
There's the odd one. When I say, like, there are some trees, elms are notorious in the spring. You cut an elm in the spring, that is an attractant for bark beetles, which carry Dutch elm disease.
Right.
So that kind of stuff. There are a few instances where I would recommend it if you really need it, but most of the time where you're in that kind of instance, the time of year for pruning, you can probably adjust that, and then you wouldn't even need to use the pruning.
Right.
So.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thank you. There is so much to talk about. So I really appreciate you answering all these questions. I think that's great. And I'm very interested in the fertilizing, because I think do you think next year will be really the trees, because of what they've had to kind of deal with this past season? Mm-hmm. I guess it's too late to have fertilized, right? So next year, is that something that people should be, you know, more aware of and considering?
Yeah, in general, this is for most plants as well, but for trees, the main root growth is right in the spring when the frost comes out of the ground.
Okay.
That's the main time. As soon as the frost comes out of the ground, the roots just start going. They're expanding well before you get any shoot growth on your trees. And then they're also growing quite a bit into the fall. So as the tree is losing its leaves, it's actually taking energy from the top of the tree and putting it down in the roots, and the roots are expanding in the fall.
Wow.
So ideally, those are the times where you would say, well, the nutrient uptake would be its greatest. So if you're putting in a nutrient or whatever that is not slow release, then you would probably say spring and fall are best.
Right.
But in general, you put in a slow release fertilizer that is around the roots, and they can take it up whenever they want, then it's really irrelevant. They can take it up in the spring, and they can take it up in the fall.
Okay.
And they can do that whenever.
Okay.
So that's the thing people always say, well, the trees are dormant now. They don't need fertilizer. Well, we still do fertilizing right now.
Wow.
Because there's still root growth. Until that ground is frozen, those roots are growing, and they're taking up nutrients.
So. Okay. Okay. My last question, I know we've covered a lot of ground, and I think, we talked a lot about mature trees and people who have, larger trees. But I think one question, I know I have a lot of clients that now, new homeowners, all these new homes, especially with Durham, we're growing like crazy. And like you said, the tree canopy is decimated. The soil is not great. And I have clients, and I'm sure you do as well, that are asking for recommendations for their yards. And the yards are smaller. There's a lot of fences. And again, the soil isn't great. What do you have some recommendations on, your favorite kind of go-to trees?
Yeah, I don't try to gravitate towards the general trees that you see. The city plants on boulevards and stuff like that. If you want to have stuff that can fit into small spaces, I mean, same with you. You do a lot of landscape type planning because you can put a lot of stuff in. You can put a lot. I see this all the time. People do landscaping projects.
Yeah.
And there's seven trees jammed into a landscaping project that within about 10 years, one would do the trick, or two or three would do the trick. So, I really, in terms of small trees that can handle small spaces, this is irrelevant of insect and disease issues because you have to do research. If you wanted to plant like a dogwood, a lot of those flowering type dogwoods.
Yes, yeah.
I think are ideal. They fit in well in landscape. You have to kind of see what's around them.
Yeah.
They can't handle sometimes a lot of shade from big other maples around or something like that. I love dogwood, service berries, Amur maples.
Okay.
Amur maples are like a small growing type of maple. They grow bright red in the fall, but they don't really get overly huge.
Mm-hmm.
I love magnolia trees.
Okay, because some of them can get big, but...
Yeah, yep. In general in this area, though, you won't get too many. In northern Canada or in southern Ontario or northern United States, most of the magnolias you get here will not get big.
Okay.
It's very rare that they get big. So, but some of them are really prone to insects and disease, like scale insects and stuff like that. So it's good to do a bit of research.
Okay.
Because certain areas have certain insects that are always coming around. Asking an arborist or even asking at your nursery, right?
Yeah. Although that can be risky sometimes. Yeah, but the nursery wants to get rid of their stock of maple trees, Jason. I'm serious. They're still pushing those Crimson Kings on clients and oak tree. I mean, I'm a pyramidal oak fan just because everybody has the privacy issues because of the small yards.
Yeah.
And then I just had somebody tell I think there's an insect that's attacking the pyramidal oak because they wanted to sell them something else. And I'm like, Yeah. So, you know, it definitely takes research. And thank you for that. Because, I mean, I try to do as much research as I can for my clients. But since I had the expert on the phone, I thought I should ask him what he recommends. So some really great choices. So thank you once again. I hope we can do this again. I know it's a huge topic. So maybe in the winter when there's more to talk about with trees, I'd love to have you back.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, there's always plenty to talk about.
Excellent.
Short on time. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. All right. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks, Joanne.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Well, there you have it, everyone. We covered a lot of information. I think we answered a lot of questions. So thank you for listening and being with me here tonight on Down the Garden Path. I'm really excited about, I want to talk a minute about next week's show. Next week's show is actually my anniversary show. So Gary and I, we've been doing this for 2 years. So we're celebrating our second year anniversary next week. So we've kind of got a slightly different format and some neat announcements to make. So you'll have to tune in and listen up to what's happening next week here on
Very exciting.
Down the Garden Path.
I hear you're giving away free pine cones.
Free pine cones, yeah. So I think lots of information on trees there.
Beautiful. Great show.
Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for joining us down the garden path here on Reality Radio 101. And we'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101.